Welcome back to another deep dive from the BlogBite podcast. We take the best engineering blogs from across the web and like basically transform them into like these bite-sized audio episodes for Yar. And today we're diving deep into the world of text-to-SQL for data analytics.
Ooh, fun.
With a fascinating blog post by Albert Chen, a data expert at LinkedIn.
Sounds pretty cool.
It is. You know, imagine just being able to ask a question in plain English.
Yeah.
And instantly get back the perfect SQL query. You know, that's the power of text to SQL, right?
Yeah, it's a total game changer for anyone who works with data.
Totally. I mean, think about it, right? Like, people who aren't SQL experts could finally access the data they need.
For sure.
Without having to learn this whole new language, right?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what Chen dives into in his blog post.
Nice.
He details the journey of building SQLBot.
SQLBot.
An AI assistant that does just that for LinkedIn's data platform.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what are some of the hurdles they had to overcome? Like, that sounds pretty ambitious.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. And one of the first things Chen highlights is just the sheer scale of the problem.
Okay.
LinkedIn's data warehouse is massive. We're talking millions of tables.
Billions.
Just finding the right table to answer a specific question is like a needle in a haystack situation.
Literally, wow.
So yeah, it's a big challenge.
So how do you even begin to tackle that, right? Like, where do you even start with that?
Well, they started by using a clever combination of AI techniques called retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, and embedding-based retrieval, or EBR.
EBR.
Think of it like this. You ask a question, and the AI uses these techniques to scan through all those millions of tables and find the ones that are most likely to contain the answer.
So it's like having a super-powered search engine for data tables.
Exactly.
Very cool.
But even with these advanced tools, you know, they still face some major challenges.
Oh, really?
For example, many of their tables had like missing or incomplete descriptions, which made it difficult for the AI to really understand what they contained.
So they had this powerful AI, but it was kind of flying blind without proper context.
Exactly. They realized they needed a way to give the AI like a deeper understanding of their data landscape.
Okay.
So they embarked on this massive effort to improve table descriptions, even going so far as to use AI to extract relevant information from existing documentation and internal discussions.
So it's like they were building a dictionary for their data.
Exactly. And that dictionary is part of what they call a knowledge graph.
A knowledge graph.
Think of it as a vast network that connects users, tables, fields, and all sorts of metadata.
Okay.
It provides the context the AI needs to make sense of the data and understand how different pieces fit together.
Got it.
It's pretty cool.
So they're basically teaching the AI to think like a data expert would.
In a way, yes, they're giving it the tools and knowledge it needs to understand not just the data itself, but also the relationships and nuances of how that data is structured and used within LinkedIn.
I see.
And it goes beyond just table descriptions. They also leverage certified code from their internal platform to further enhance this knowledge graph.
Hold on, certified code. What does that even mean?
So within their data platform, users can certify code in notebooks if it's considered reliable and accurate.
Okay.
And the system then uses these certified notebooks, along with those that are frequently used and recently created, to extract even more valuable information about table usage and query patterns.
Ah, so they're tapping into the collective wisdom of their data community to make the AI even smarter.
Precisely. It's a brilliant approach.
It is. Okay, so they tackle the challenge of finding the right tables, understanding them deeply. But what about actually generating the SQL query itself?
This is where large language models, or LLMs, take center stage.
Okay.
They're used for multiple critical tasks. First, they help to further filter and rank the candidate tables identified by RAG and EBR.
Okay, so like that initial list.
Yeah, remember how they initially get a list of maybe 20 potentially relevant tables?
Yeah.
The LLM helps narrow that down to the top 7.
Yes.
Taking into account all that knowledge graph information, table descriptions, example queries, and even internal jargon from the user's question.
Wow, so it's like a second layer of intelligence making sure the AI is focusing on the most promising options.
Right.
Awesome.
They also use LLMs to select and rank the most relevant fields from those top 7 tables, considering things like how often those fields are accessed.
Got it.
But the real magic happens when it comes to actually writing the query.
Okay, this is where it all comes together, right?
Yeah, so tell me more. Okay, so their approach is what they call iterative.
Iterative.
Instead of trying to generate the entire query in one go, the system breaks it down into steps. Hmm. It creates a plan and then tackles each part of that plan, incrementally building the query piece by piece.
So it's not just spitting out a block of code, it's carefully constructing the query step by step.
Exactly. And as each step is solved, that solution is stored in the chatbot's memory to be used for the next step. It's a methodical and intelligent process, especially for those complex queries that might involve multiple tables and conditions.
That makes a lot of sense. But I wonder, what about simple queries? Wouldn't this approach make them unnecessarily complex?
That's a great question, and the blog post actually addresses that.
Oh, good.
They recognize that for simpler questions, this iterative approach could lead to overly verbose queries.
Yeah.
So they added a rule to the query planner to minimize the number of steps it creates.
Gotcha.
This ensures that simple queries stay concise, while complex ones still benefit from the step-by-step approach.
It's all about finding the right balance between power and efficiency.
Exactly.
But even with this sophisticated system, there's always a chance for errors, right?
Of course, which is why they have a robust validation and self-correction system in place.
Okay.
After the initial query is generated, it goes through a series of validators.
The validators.
These validators check for things like whether the tables and fields exist and if the query syntax is correct.
So it's like having a syntax checker for SQL.
Yes, but it's even smarter than that.
What?
If an error is detected, the information is passed to a self-correction agent, which can actually update the query.
Wow.
It might even go as far as retrieving additional tables or fields if needed.
So it's not just identifying errors, it's actively trying to fix them.
Exactly.
That's impressive.
And it uses all the knowledge from that knowledge graph we discussed earlier to make those fixes as accurate and intelligent as possible.
Very cool. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've seen how they tackled finding the right tables, understanding them, and then actually generating and validating the SQL query. But I have a feeling there's a lot more to this story.
There is even the most brilliant tech is useless if people don't use it, which brings us to the next part of Chen's blog post.
Yeah.
Creating a user-friendly experience.
Right, because what good is a fancy SQL generating AI if it's too complicated or frustrating to actually use?
Exactly, and that's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Let's dive into that in part two of our deep dive.
Sounds good.
So what's fascinating here is how Chen emphasizes that user experience is absolutely central to driving adoption.
Yeah.
You can have the most powerful AI in the world, but if it's not easy and enjoyable to use, people just won't bother.
That makes perfect sense. People are busy. They want tools that make their lives easier, not more complicated.
Exactly. And that philosophy is reflected in every aspect of how they designed and implemented SQLBot.
So how did they make it user-friendly? Give me the details.
Well, one of the first things they did was integrate SQLBot directly into their existing data platform called Darwin.
That's smart. No need to learn a whole new system or jump between different tools.
Right. It's all about seamless integration. And according to Chen, this move alone boosted adoption by 5 to 10 times compared to their initial prototype, which was a standalone app.
Wow. That's a huge jump. So accessibility is key.
Absolutely. But it's not just about being in the platform. It's about making the experience itself intuitive and enjoyable.
Okay, I'm all ears. Give me some examples of how they did that.
Well, think about how people naturally interact with data. They don't always jump straight to writing SQL queries, right? Sometimes they want to explore what tables are available, ask clarifying questions, maybe see some reference queries, or even brush up on SQL syntax.
It's more of a conversation than a command and control type of interaction.
Exactly. And that's why they moved away from just spitting out SQL queries as the only response. They introduced something called intent classification to understand what the user is actually trying to achieve and then tailor the response accordingly.
So if I just wanted to browse some tables related to, say, user engagement, the bot could help me do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It could show you relevant tables, their descriptions, how popular they are, what other tables they're commonly joined with, and even link you to more detailed information in their metadata tool Data Hub.
That's so much more helpful than just being bombarded with a complex query I might not even understand yet.
Right. And to further enhance this conversational aspect, they added quick replies to guide users on potential follow-up actions.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Give me an example.
Let's say you get a query from the bot, but you're not quite happy with the table selection. A quick reply might be, update table selections, prompting you to refine your request.
Ah, so it's like having a helpful assistant guiding you through the process. No more feeling lost in a sea of data.
Exactly. And for users who really want a step-by-step experience, they even offer a guided mode.
Tell me more about this guided mode. It sounds interesting.
In guided mode, the bot walks you through each stage of the process, finding tables, writing the query, validating it, and you can provide feedback at each step.
That's fantastic for new users or those who just want a little extra hand-holding.
Right. It makes the whole process transparent and gives users more control.
Okay, so they've made it accessible, conversational, and even added this guided mode. What else did they do to enhance the user experience? I have a feeling they didn't stop there.
You're right, they didn't. They recognize that even with all these features, just presenting a raw SQL query can be intimidating for many users.
Yeah, it's like looking under the hood of a car. You might see a bunch of parts, but have no idea what they do or how they work together.
Exactly. So they incorporated rich display elements to make the output more understandable and less intimidating.
Okay, give me some examples of these display elements.
For tables, they don't just show you the name. They also provide a description tags indicating things like popularity or certification status, how often the table is accessed on average each month, what tables it's commonly joined with, and, as I mentioned before, a link to Data Hub for a deep dive into the table's details.
So it's giving you context and insights beyond just the bare-bone structure of the data.
Right. And for the query itself, they don't just display the raw code. They show you the formatted query and explanation of what it does in plain English, and validation checks to show whether the tables and fields exist and if the syntax is correct.
That's amazing. Like, the bot is explaining its thought process, making it much easier to understand and learn from.
Exactly. It builds trust and helps users feel more confident in the results. And they went even further by addressing a major pain point for anyone working with enterprise data access control.
Ah, yes. Not everyone should have access to every piece of data.
Yeah.
How did they handle that?
They built it directly into the user experience. When the bot generates a query, it automatically checks if the user has the necessary permissions to access the data involved.
That's brilliant. Okay. No more frustrating access denied errors or having to figure out complicated permission settings.
Exactly. And if the user needs to access the data through a specific group, the bot automatically includes the code to leverage that group's credentials.
That's a huge time saver, especially for new users who might not even be aware of all the intricacies of access control.
Right. It's all about anticipating user needs and smoothing out the rough edges to create a truly enjoyable and productive experience.
They've really thought of everything. But even with the best design, there's always room for improvement and customization, right? Especially in a large organization like LinkedIn, with diverse data needs.
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly what Chen addresses in the next part of his blog post. He talks about the importance of empowering users to customize SQLBot to fit their specific workflows and data needs.
Okay, I'm really interested to hear about these customization options. Let's dive into that and the final challenge Chen discusses in part 3 of our deep dive. All right, so we're talking customization. Sounds like they really want to make sure users can tailor SQLBot to their specific needs.
Yeah, they do. And Chen outlines 3 main ways users can customize their experience.
Okay.
The first is by defining data sets that are specific to their product area.
Okay.
Let's say you work on the messaging feature at LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You could tell the bot to prioritize tables related to messaging when it's trying to answer your questions.
So it's like creating a mini data universe.
Yeah, exactly.
That's tailored to your team's focus.
You can specify email groups or even individual users whose data usage patterns the bot should learn from.
Okay.
This makes sure SQLBot is always giving you the most relevant recommendations based on the data your team actually uses.
Very cool. That's a really cool feature. So what's the second way users can customize the experience?
The second way is through custom instructions.
Okay.
Users can actually provide written guidelines directly within the platform to shape how the bot behaves.
Interesting.
They can either provide more general domain knowledge or very specific preferences for how the bot selects tables, writes queries, or even fixes errors.
So it's like giving the bot some extra coaching based on your own expertise and preferences.
Precisely.
Got it. And what's the third way?
The third way to customize is with example queries.
Okay.
Let's say you've managed to craft a particularly tricky query that you're proud of.
Yeah.
You can actually share it with the bot so it can learn from your expertise.
So if I'm understanding this right, I'd create a notebook with my awesome query.
Right.
Mark it as certified in the data platform.
Exactly.
And then the bot can use that as a reference for future queries.
It's like a community-driven effort to make the bot smarter and more efficient over time.
That's cool.
Everyone benefits from sharing their hard-earned knowledge.
I love that it's harnessing the collective intelligence of all the data experts at LinkedIn to make SQLBot even better. Okay, so they've built a powerful system, they've made it user-friendly, and they've even given users ways to customize it. But how do they know it's actually working well? How do they measure its performance?
That's a great question, and it leads us to the final challenge Chen discusses in his blog post, ongoing benchmarking.
Benchmarking.
You need a way to track how the system is performing, identify areas for improvement, and make sure it's meeting the needs of its users.
Right, because what good is a fancy AI if it's not actually delivering accurate results or if it's too slow to be useful?
Exactly, and Chen really stresses the importance of having a benchmark that's tailored to your specific needs.
Yeah.
The requirements for text-to-SQL can vary wildly depending on who your target users are, how complex your data is, and what types of questions people are asking.
I see.
So a one-size-fits-all benchmark wouldn't really cut it.
Makes sense.
At LinkedIn, they worked with domain experts from 10 different product areas.
Wow.
To come up with the set of over 130 benchmark questions.
That's a lot.
Each question was carefully crafted to be realistic, and they made sure to have the correct SQL query for each one.
That's a pretty thorough approach. So what kind of metrics did they use to actually evaluate performance?
Well, they looked at a variety of things. Accuracy is obviously important, so they measured things like how often the bot was able to correctly identify the relevant tables and fields, how often it hallucinated tables or fields that didn't actually exist, and whether the syntax of the generated query was correct.
So they were making sure the bot wasn't just making things up or spitting out gibberish.
Exactly. But speed is also crucial. So they also measured how long it took the bot to generate each query.
Okay.
And here's where it gets really interesting. They discovered that for about 60% of their benchmark questions, there were actually multiple correct ways to write the SQL query.
Wow. So there wasn't always just one right answer.
Nope.
That must have made things pretty tricky when it came to evaluating accuracy.
It did. They had to get creative, so they used a combination of human evaluation and what they call LLM as a judge to assess the quality of the queries.
Wait, so they're using an LLM to judge the output of another LLM?
It is.
That's wild.
But it's actually proven to be quite effective. They found that the LLM judge agrees with human scores about 75% of the time.
Okay.
And when there's a big difference, it often means they might have missed a valid solution that they need to add to their benchmark.
So it's a way to double check their own assumptions and potentially uncover even better ways to write these queries.
Exactly. They're constantly learning and improving their benchmark based on this feedback. It's a never-ending process.
It sounds like they've really gone above and beyond to create a robust system that's both accurate and user-friendly. What kind of results are they seeing from all this effort? Are people actually using SQLBot and are they happy with it?
They are. Chen shares some encouraging results from user surveys. Around 95% of users rated SQLBot's query accuracy as passes or above, with 40% giving it very good or excellent ratings.
Wow, those are impressive numbers.
They are.
So what does this all mean? What's the takeaway for our listeners?
I think it shows that text-to-SQL has the potential to revolutionize the way we work with data.
Yeah.
But to be truly successful, you need to go beyond just building a cool AI.
Right.
You need to think carefully about the user experience, give users the ability to customize the system to their needs, and constantly benchmark and improve performance.
It's not just about the technology itself. It's about making that technology work for the people who are actually using it.
Exactly. And Chen leaves us with a thought-provoking question. What other challenges and opportunities lie ahead for text-to-SQL as the technology continues to evolve?
Ooh.
It's something we'll all need to grapple with as this field continues to advance.
It's a fascinating question, and if any of our listeners want to learn more about LinkedIn's journey with SQLBot, I highly recommend checking out Albert Chen's full blog post. We'll include a link in the show notes. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of text-to-SQL.
Thanks for having me.